Listen, so now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the it's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Indeed it is, the Pancakes and Power Slam show, your late night solution to your early morning rush. I am Chris Featherstone, along always with Ryan Fuqua.
Good evening out there, everyone. We're here with you all night like a Brock Lesnar promo throughout Raw.
This is going to be a fun evening. Well, yes, ladies and gentlemen, you know the deal. Call in, call in. We will be taking calls all throughout the evening. 347-884-8452. Call in quick. Call in early. Share your Raw thoughts. We, of course, as you know, or if you're very new of listening to us, we go into Raw first. But if you are a weekly listener, we appreciate you. Participate in live chat, as always, as well. And once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Pancakes and Power Slams, let's go. Of course, as we do every week, the Raw recap and analysis. We first started off with the contract signing. We thought was going to be the contract signing and ended up being delayed. And instead, we saw Edge come out and he pep talked Cena. As far as that little segment is concerned, I thought it was good. I liked it. It's always good to see Edge back. It was a very big surprise to see him back. The first televised appearance of Edge in character with the haircut. We saw him before being, you know, inducted in the Hall of Fame and coming out the night after. So it was definitely good to see him back. Just a little tidbit about that little segment there. We heard more Cena chants. So Edge, if Edge can do it, I would like to actually see that. I've liked to seen that go a little bit more, like a couple more weeks. Like you got former rivals come and pep talk him out of what he is now. I think they could have built that up a little bit more if they have another month with Brock Lesnar and Cena. I would like to see like a Triple H come back or Shawn Michaels come back. Just people that he's known to have had, you know, lasting feuds with throughout the years. It'll be good to see, just to, you know, kind of go along with the pep talk of getting him out of the state that he is now.
Yeah, I agree. That would be, actually, you bring up a good point. That'd be good to see some old rivals come back. I was okay with Edge coming back for this right here. You know, wasn't anything too big, but it was still a good idea. I thought the crowd could have been behind Edge a little more. I don't know, maybe just the arena was big, just didn't sound like they were all the way there behind him, like they would get behind him when he would mention, like, trigger words, like when he said Shawn Michaels' name, of course, things like that. But, yeah, this was still cool, and I did notice when Cena came out during his entrance, he said, "I feel a little bit older today," and I actually seen online that yesterday was his birthday, so... Happy birthday to good old Johnny Boy.
Good old Johnny Boy. And we went to the next the first match of the night in the next segment, which was Chris Jericho defeating Kofi Kingston. Decent match. It wasn't anything that's wowed me about this match. I've seen better Kofi Kingston and Chris Jericho matches. Sad to me just what they're doing with Kofi Kingston these days, and he's just a whipping boy. I mean, he jobbed to Daniel Bryan, he jobbed to Jericho, and I don't see any uprise in the near future with Kofi Kingston. I mean, you know, a lot of people always say, you know, hey, we'll turn, you know, the heel turn, or if they turn face or heel, you know, they'll change them. But Raw and SmackDown so crowded now that he's just really, really stuck.
Yeah. One of the things for me, actually, when I was paying attention to the commentary and I actually seen this on WWE.com today, they were trying to plug up Jericho as the new cerebral assassin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not okay with that at all. I mean, Jericho's his own guy. He's been established for years. The cerebral assassin has been Triple H's thing forever. So
yeah.
Hopefully they don't go too far with that. I mean, I know it's part of the storyline right now, him trying to get in Punk's head. But, yeah, as for this match, all I can say is we got to see the SOS. It's not every match you get to see that from Kofi. So, and it wasn't used as a finisher, so it's a good indication that these are two good superstars that can wrestle really well. Like you said, the jobbing of Kofi, and he's kind of like the poor man's Henry, just being a spot filler lately. Hopefully he can get out of this rut sometime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, after the match, Jericho gets on the mic and does more family bashing, and then we go to Brock Lesnar's video package. He had three in the evening. And the first one was against Jeff Hardy, his debut match. Once again, this is the third week in a row. Jeff Hardy is a proud member of hashtag TNA. And as I go with these with the explaining the segments, you'll see an interesting trend. There's a common denominator of all the three clips that they saw they aired, and there's a common denominator. And when I'm done with the third one, we'll figure that out if you haven't already. So yeah, Teddy Long was the referee in that match with Jeff Hardy and Brock Lesnar. That was a pretty interesting thing. It was he started to become general manager of SmackDown. Was that 2004, if I'm not mistaken? That was his first year as a SmackDown GM.
Not
Heyman,
sure at all. Yeah, it's been a long time, though.
Yeah, because it was Heyman and Steph was, you know, in that area, 02, 03, around that time. And I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Tay Long took over after Steph. I don't. You know, you as the listeners, and you know how it goes. If you got the answer, tell us on the chat in the chat room, or feel free to call in. We'll be taking calls really soon. 347-884-8452. Let's flood these airwaves with your thoughts and opinions on what you've seen on Raw. So we'll go forward to the John Laurinaitis and Eve segment. Eve becomes the executive administrator, so she finally has some type of direction with her life in the WWE. I don't see. I mean, I'm not. I don't really care, honestly. I guess, you know, I guess her as a heel is dying down. It really didn't do much of anything. Maybe the first few weeks, but after that, it was just redundant. And I guess this will continue to show her heel character aligning herself with Laurinaitis and David Otunga.
Yeah, I don't like this at all. And I actually, that's what I was watching Raw. I mean, that's quote unquote in my notes. It just says I don't like this at all. That's how bad it is. I mean, it's. I guess to me, she's getting heat, kind of like when Vicky Guerrero was running SmackDown, was married to Edge and all that, where it was just, I mean, you get a nosebleed just thinking about it. It was just that annoying. So I guess for me, she's, if it's like that for me, then she's doing her job. So who knows?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. We go forward to the CM Punk interview. And, the CM Punk interview. He just, it's not much to say about that other than, more family, more sister, more father, defending and things like that. I just, this angle, it's all together, is just, going down the tube to me. It like I said before, a minor pay-per-view, it could have worked, save it for a minor pay-per-view, but it's just going further down the tube to me. It has no interest in my eyes at all. There's not many Jericho feuds, a very, very, very short amount of Jericho feuds that I just wish that went over, that just ended. And I honestly have to say that with the direction that this has been going, sadly, CM Punk and Chris Jericho, with all the potential that it has, CM Punk and Chris Jericho is one of those feuds that I wish that would just, end.
Yeah, it's like you said right there, just so much potential, but it's being wasted. I mean, we said it a week or two ago where we felt like maybe these two are being held back or toned down in this feud. Because it just seems like there should be no way that two people who can both drop pipe bombs on the mic and, their quality of wrestling, it just shouldn't go this way. But I just feel the whole family thing, it's alcoholism, all that, it's needless. Just real quick, I hate to go there, but it's like the more I see of this angle, the more I'm like thinking to myself that is WWE kind of contradicting themselves with the whole family rating and the anti-bullying campaign with this going on? I mean, you're calling somebody's dad an alcoholic. That's a real thing. That's a real disease. It just, to me, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. And then the same thing with how Daniel Bryan talks to AJ every week, and they have King ripping jokes on Vicky, and it's supposed to be, oh, no, we don't bully, we don't do this, we're family rating. So it's just, I don't know. They might as well say Punk was the one driving Katie Vick in the car that night instead of Kane.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Katie Vick.
Yeah. Little throwback. Yeah.
Throwback moment of the week. Katie Vick. It was the worst angle in WWE history. Probably the most taboo angle of at least. I'm sure people would argue that about the Katie Vick, but yeah, it's so taboo. Yeah, that's actually a good topic. The Katie Vick angle, and I would have to throw in the higher power angle and the whole crucifixion, Stone Cold on the cross, and all that. Yeah, that was just deplorable. I feel the article on Bleacher Report coming about that. We will go forward to Lord Tensai defeating R-Truth. No crowd reaction for this match. It was a kind of squash. I guess they didn't want to bury Truth as much as they could. He had a couple of punches in, and maybe a kick or so, but it's a relative squash match. And, you know, all the potential that Truth has for them to just feed him to Tensai is just ridiculous to me. I'm totally not in favor of that decision. And I just wish that they, I mean, it's like they, the steam just, it basically fizzled out in a week because he defeats John Cena, and he could have fought someone on a scale of Cena. I mean, the options are, you know, few and far between, but maybe you know, instead of Mark Henry, of the fast count that they had with Daniel Bryan, it could have been just a regular match between Tensai and Sheamus, and Daniel Bryan does a fast count at the end of a 5 to 7 minute match. I mean, it could have been done a little better than what we saw, and just, you know, handing R-Truth to Tensai is back to relative squash match central that just does nothing for Tensai. It's ridiculous to me.
See, I actually feel just a tad bit different. I think it's a little more direction, as long as, since he's facing a bigger superstar or a more known superstar like Truth, and as you said, the match is lasting a little longer. It's not too much of a, you know, going into a storyline or anything like that, but we know we're getting with Tensai. I mean, this is just going to keep happening until maybe he wins a U.S. title or something. I feel like we're going to see this every week for a while. I'm more concerned with where Truth is going. So, I mean, he's older now, so probably doesn't have but a few years left, and maybe main eventing the, I can't remember which pay-per-view that was that he main evented with Cena, but maybe that just...
I think
sure
it
that was...
Capital Punishment or something like that. Yeah, Capital Punishment,
sure.
If I'm not mistaken.
Pretty sure
like
that
July
was the peak
of last
his
year.
Career.
Yeah. And it was at a pay-per-view that we most likely we'll never see again. Capital Punishment had one of the worst, the lowest numbers of the year, and it was awful. So, yeah. Yeah, and then Kane, we saw a Kane segment. He was interrupted by Randy Orton while he was talking. We saw another return, Paul Bearer. He rolls Paul Bearer into the cooler, and Kane doesn't care. He says, quote, "My only true dad has been the devil himself." Okie dokie. Orton comes out and one-ups Kane, and he hits him with a pipe. This is the last that we'll see before the match on Sunday. So, most likely, because unless they do something on SmackDown. But as far as a bigger scale, this is it. And I'm just not happy with what I saw. You know, to be the go home Raw for the pay per view. It just really didn't do anything for me. Kane talking for an amount of time in the first place, for an extended amount of time in the first place, I will continue to say is terrible, and I don't see a point of doing that when it can just be. They could be in a tag match or something that is more physical than this, you know, throwing Bob Orton into the mix.
Yeah. Kane got some whats, actually. So
yeah, I heard that,
maybe,
too.
Yeah. So maybe he needs to be off the mic and just be silent for a while. But he got past it. They didn't what him to death like some superstars get it. Paul Bearer, man, that character will never die. I mean, geez, he's always around. I don't know. I guess I want to say if you're over 20, you probably don't really get excited about seeing Paul Bearer. So, like, yeah. And then I thought about it, like, man, hasn't Kane, now that makes Kane and Undertaker both have killed him off, his character off, but he has Kane
yep.
back. So
yep.
Undertaker at the, I don't know what, I want to say maybe a Survivor Series where he poured
concrete. Was SummerSlam, the handicap match against the Dudleys.
Okay, yeah, that's probably about right.
It may be SummerSlam, but I thought it was. I mean, it may be Survivor Series, but it may. So you know, they're a few months apart. So around the approaching fall season to fall season, you know, it was around there. You may be right. I don't even remember what year that was, though.
I
have no clue.
And then just my last thing, I feel like this is good. This feud was going all right, and then just for some reason, this past Raw, it just made me feel like they dropped the ball. I don't know. It just lost my interest after this last show for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why.
Yeah, I don't see. It'll be hard. It'll be hard for them to continue something else with this feud after this match. It'll be hard for me to see something go further with this. So, and then we saw a very interesting segment that I'll give you the floor after I'm done. Alex Riley gets some TV time on Raw. He goes to Chris Jericho and tells Jericho that he was kicked out of the locker room because he was for seeing CM Punk drink. Jericho was reluctant to believe that, and then all of a sudden he peeps in Punk's locker room, and seemingly Punk is drinking. Now, the only thing that I'll say about this is that we saw, you know, we heard some CM drunk chants, and it was just pointless to me. I guess it led to what we saw at the end, but I guess that's as far as we got.
Yeah, I feel like that was the only reason. Like you said, it just. Pointless, and it just led to the later spot in the night, but got to see my guy A-Rod, so that was pretty cool. I'll take it any way you can get on TV.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a face or a heel with that.
He
has the face role, but I guess that's just that's just what we say. I'm with you too. I mean, seeing Alex Riley is a good thing, no matter what. So then we saw Big Show and Kali defeat Cody Rhodes and Alberto Del Rio. They are doing this Big Show and Kali team again, and they are 2-0. Interestingly enough, Alberto Del Rio leaves Cody Rhodes, so I guess that kind of. That kind of helps. That kind of doesn't hurt Rhodes or Alberto Del Rio because essentially it was a handicap match. So you know, it didn't really hurt them. So I'm cool with that. I'm cool with Alberto Del Rio leaving and it causing Cody to lose to them. The only thing I can see from this show and Kali. Team is that, you know, show possibly losing out at Extreme Rules and then they just kind of throw show into obscurity like they do oftentimes, and he teams with Kali and they just kind of formulate a team together a little bit more. Show's in the twilight of his career. He got his WrestleMania moment. You know, he'll feud with Cody, and it'll be interesting to see where if he does win, it'll be interesting to see where they will take him as far as the Intercontinental title feud is concerned, because it seems like most of the feuds that we saw, that we've been seeing, will probably end after Extreme Rules.
Yeah. Because I was wondering the same thing, like where the heck the show, I mean, win or lose, I don't know where he goes from here after ER. The only thing I took from this match, though, well, first, I guess no more hashtag Super Show for Alberto Del Rio because Cole said that he was the newest superstar on SmackDown. So that kind of got swept under the rug there. I don't know. He might have already been on SmackDown when he was injured. Who knows? But as for this match, the only thing I took away from ADR leaving was my fantasy of the week, I guess, is maybe since Alberto Del Rio is on SmackDown now, who knows, after this ER match with Rhodes and Show, maybe Rhodes may turn face and be the other main event face on SmackDown. Well, I guess he'd have to be behind Sheamus and Orton, but that's a tall task right there. That's a big baby.
Don't hold your breath on that one for sure. Do not hold your breath on that one. I don't see the Rhodes turn anytime soon. But, you know, for those who are wishing a draft, because originally the 23rd of April was supposed to be the date of the draft. So, you know, that was initially why it was 3 hours. But so I guess we saw our draft because he became an official member of SmackDown. So this was the shortest draft in WWE history. The first draft, I believe, was in 2002. So, you know, the 10-year history of the draft, we saw the shortest one in history. So
and no nostalgia, as we said before. Any type of anniversary or history, they just don't really bring things up anymore. So
they could have
cashed in big on this one.
Oh yeah, definitely. They could have, but I guess like I've been saying for a long time now, you know, with Laurinaitis being the GM of both shows, it just doesn't make sense. They announced a U.S. title match between Santino and Miz, announced for Extreme Rules pre-show on YouTube. I'm actually a very, very big advocate of this because I used to be a fan of the free for alls before the pay per view, and I'm cool with this. The Sunday Night Heats as well, before the pay per view, the live Sunday Night Heats, and I'm fine with this. I like it a lot, actually. They should push this, you know, and have and making the U.S. title match between Santino and Miz is a good way to push the pre-show concept to us as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't care if it's just a half hour and it's online. That's definitely good for pre-game because I know I used to like watching, as you said, the Sunday Night Heats live from the side of the pay-per-view, and they'd have that one match. And if you're on the borderline of ordering the event, kind of makes you think, well, hey, I can watch this event because that was a good match. But but only thing here, wow, Miz. I mean, just technically, if you go from April to April for Mania, what was that, 12 months ago?
Yeah.
Let's just say 13, whatever. 13 months ago, we were paying to watch the Miz in the main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, top spot.
Yeah, and now this is where he is. So it's
don't look now, but
he could be out of wrestling soon if this keeps up, man. Because they've cashed in on the Miz already. He's hit his peak. He's not going to be back where he ever was when he was champ and beat Cena at Mania. At least I feel that way.
It's hard for me to think different, honestly. I want to think different, but it's really hard for me to think different as well. So,
and I don't want to say out of wrestling. He might be on a TNA. Let's put it like that. So, yeah, he'll be here.
Yeah, and going to TNA these days. Before TNA had a little bit of interest, you know, peaked interest in people, but going to TNA these days is just essentially sabotaging your career. No, you know, I hate to be that, you know, I hate to be that critical towards TNA, but yeah, they've got some big shoes to fill. And so we saw Jericho convincing John Laurinaitis to give CM Punk a sobriety test. Then we saw Josh Matthews trying to interview Brock Lesnar and eventually gets thrown in some backstage props. And next we saw Nikki Bella defeating Beth Phoenix, becoming the two-time Divas champion. Just a little tidbit on that. They are trying to build Karma's return. They were thinking about dropping the title at Extreme Rules, but unfortunately, Beth Phoenix legitimately injured herself, and so she'll be getting scanned and you know getting MRI, and so. It's unfortunate. I don't remember the exact injury, but it had something to do with a bone that helps the placement of your foot and your foot not sliding. She sprained that. So yeah, it's unfortunate to see that. I'd rather see a Karma and Beth Phoenix build, but. Yeah, it the Bellas and they're thinking about their contract ending soon, and you know I guess they're just to write them off possibly. You know, Karma's going to come and just you know demolish both of them, but them being champ at the time and Karma coming in as champ, I'm not okay with that, just because I would rather see a build with Karma.
Yeah, and I remember I thought when Karma left, she cut a little promo on, was it the Bellas?
It was the Bellas, yes.
Was saying she, so that maybe it kind of works out. But feel so bad for Beth, like you said. I mean, I heard a stat where they said she was 205 days as champ, and the record was 213.
Yes.
Man, so that really sucks. I can't remember if they said by who, so I don't know.
I don't think they said anybody, but the only person I would think of would be Michelle McCool. As far as the Divas Championship, she
yeah,
was.
Yeah, since they didn't mention it, yeah, it might have been her. So. Yeah, who knows? I didn't know. Wasn't sure, and you said that was Bree's second time winning. Was it Bree that won?
Nikki won both times,
Nikki.
I believe.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because I thought maybe both of them had won at once, but yeah, oh well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, regardless, I remember the first time they would carry it together, but
yeah.
So yeah, so we saw CM Punk eventually. Taking the sobriety test, and he faked being drunk. He beats up on Jericho. The only thing that I got from that is that he still may have been drunk because he still said the alphabet wrong backwards. He said S before T. So he failed that part, but he did pass the walking part. I guess that's the best that they had going into the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Didn't wow me at all.
No, this was just lame to me. I wasn't feeling this at all, man, and it was just another lame WWF plug. so, yeah, you got to say that, and they blurred it out. This felt like a mid-card spot. Like, they would do something like this for the mid-card, not for the WWE champ. Mm-hmm. like you said, just another watered down, man. I think these two were just being watered down, but this was just, like I said, lame. So, and
yeah,
Punk Laurinaitis is not Austin McMahon, so let's kind of stray away from that. I feel like they're forcing it down our throats so they can say, hey, this is McMahon Austin Reloaded, and it's not.
Yeah. Sean on the chat room says that he believes that the Punk alcohol angle should have been saved for a different heel. Nothing wrong with Jericho, but he doesn't seem like this type of story is for him. I think that's a very, very good point. Especially like we've said many times, you know, the potential that that both of them have, this angle is just really toning both of them down. So,
and like you said, save it for another heel. And
Miz would have been good for that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And if Punk was chasing the title,
exactly,
that would have been even better.
Yes.
You know, a little more ambition for it and everything. A little more fuel. He's already, you know, it's like Jericho's like a gnat or ants at a picnic. So.
Yeah. We saw another Brock Lesnar video. The very wretched defeat on SmackDown a while ago against Hogan. So Hulk Hogan, I said Jeff Hardy at the beginning, Hulk Hogan's number two. So I think that the listeners may be getting where I'm drifting here. They didn't show the blood, but they showed the very toned-down version of that match. I remember that match like it was yesterday after seeing that, and it was just a very, very brutal beating that Hulk Hogan had. He lost by a bear hug and ended up bleeding internally, and Brock Lesnar wiped his blood across his chest. It was pretty brutal from coming from Hogan, coming on on behalf of Hulk Hogan, if anybody. So then we saw Mark Henry defeating Sheamus. Daniel Bryan does the fast count. He jumps and then Sheamus gets mad. He jumps Daniel Bryan from behind, but Daniel Bryan gets the upper hand on Sheamus and puts him in the yes lock. I guess since he has the upper hand going into the show, this might solidify Sheamus's win. I can see this is probably one of the only angles that I can see a little bit more going with it. I personally don't want Daniel Bryan to be out of the title picture. If Sheamus wins, hopefully they continue this. At least another pay-per-view. I'll be cool with that.
Yeah, I do stop and ask myself how old I was here for a second when I was watching this, because I'm sitting here watching Mark Henry as the challenger, who's been in wrestling since, at least when I was in high school.
96, I believe, is when he started.
Said 96?
I believe it was 96, yeah.
Yeah, so that's about right. I think I was a freshman or so. And then he's going against this challenger, Sheamus, who, like I said, when I was in high school, who knows what Sheamus was up to. But then King called a 2 out of 3 falls match a throwback.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one, man. That's just how just goes to show how they don't have these type of matches anymore, and it's kind of sad some of the matches they don't do anymore. But, Daniel Bryan, I was gave him the nickname here of either the Yesseree or the Referee Yes. So special Yesseree or special Referee Yes.
Special Yes Referee.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of the special guest referee,
yes,
the special
yes
referee.
Special yes referee. with him, Ree finally got a win, so that's cool. First time. I believe this first time Sheamus hasn't had the upper hand, it feels like, in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've seen him, go to break or end the show where he was laying on his back or somebody got the upper hand of him. It seems like it's been a while.
Yeah.
He's been on such a hot streak, but I still love Sheamus right now. Still very high on him.
Yeah.
A lot of respect.
Yep. Thank you, all the callers that are holding. We'll get to the calls real very shortly. We're going to finish the recap on Raw and get some calls. If you're listening, feel free to call in 347-884-8452. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. We saw Santino and Zack Ryder defeat Primo and Epico. What in the world is the point of this? The tag team champions loses for the second week in a row, and they're tag team champions. It's just ridiculous to me. I just don't see. And they're throwing together another team, Santino and Ryder. One good thing of this is that Ryder got a bunch of pops, which really, really surprised me. So other than that, it was just pointless. I don't understand why that happened. It was just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, another week, another loss. I don't know, maybe they're building up for the Abraham Washington thing, which I kind of hope not, because I'd rather Rosa stay with Epico and Primo and maybe use Washington somewhere else. I'm sure there's somebody on the roster that could use his guidance. I like the, I don't know if you know this, but when Santino came in the ring during his entrance, he ran up on, I believe, Epico with the Cobra. And
yes.
So kind of got down and tried to call a timeout. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Then it got me to thinking, man, I remember when Santino and Rosa were in the same stable. You know, those two in Beth Phoenix, so that was pretty crazy, little evolution of Rose's character. But another week, another Santino win. Santino and the Cobra rising.
Yeah, absolutely. Kane Rose, Paul Bearer out of the cooler, and then he rolls him back in. I don't even know what he said. And I didn't even really care to rewind the DVR, honestly, to see what he said, because I didn't really think it was a point of that. Speaking of Abraham Washington, he tried to recruit Primo and Epico. Then we saw Brodus Clay and Hornswoggle defeat Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger by DQ because Vicky slapped Brodus Clay. Now, I don't know how I feel about this Brodus Clay and Hornswoggle thing. I'm not going to completely say no to it. But what I am going to completely say no to is Hornswoggle in a singlet. I don't think that should ever happen again. And if he wants to keep at least the H going on what he did with the – I don't know. Hopefully they don't have him actually teaming with him often in matches, coming out as a, you know, kind of a mascot or something like that, maybe. But other than that, I hope that they don't have him teaming with him in actual matches. Another little tidbit about that is that just like we've been saying, we need some chemistry, we need some gelling in the Ziggler and Swagger tag team. And she said another. She said another description.
Yeah.
She said the two greatest athletes. And
yeah.
I said, okay, well, if not GTU, then TGA, something. I mean, just have them be a name, something. Because another thing is that they still come out to just Ziggler's music. And if they want to make the music of that team. I like the theme song. It's cool. But there's only – I mean, the Titantron is just Ziggler. So at least do something that just kind of helps, you know, the team, you know, mesh more as a oiled, you know, well-oiled team.
Yeah. And I'm getting kind of scared with this team because I don't know – and I may be in the minority here, but Vicky Guerrero – has been more entertaining than Ziggler and Swagger to me. Like, it's just been, like, the past 2 or 3 weeks. But I'm like, oh, no. if that starts to happen, then what the heck is going to happen with Ziggler and Swagger? Because I can't be the only one that feels like that. Hey, maybe I am. Maybe I'm just nuts. But
no, you're not.
That's scary.
You're not.
That's scary. So a little scary for them. Like I said, I'm with you, man. Hornswoggle is the best. I like seeing him out there, but still don't know how I feel. Like, I think at least if Hornswoggle is always with Brodus Clay, I can take that. I don't know if they need to actually be tag team.
Right,
But just Funkasaurus, man, it's a spectacle. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Spectacle.
Yeah, I can handle Hornswoggle being with Clay. I mean, they both have that, you know, misfit type of, you know, gimmick.
And Clay's actually okay on the mic. Like, he doesn't fumble over his words or anything.
I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it. You know, for years they've been trying to find a spot for Hornswoggle. He's been staying on the roster, and they've just been tossing it everywhere. And you know, if he finds this home, you know, I'm not opposed to it. I'm not. You know, we'll see what happens. Then we go into the last couple segments of the evening. We saw the third Brock Lesnar video. He defeated Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 19. So if you haven't got my drift yet, the three videos that they showed was Jeff Hardy, Hulk Hogan, and Kurt Angle. Now, there is a common denominator with all three of them, and if you haven't guessed it yet, all three of them are active on the TNA roster. And just like I say, every week, TNA can do absolutely nothing about it because WWE owns the footage, so they can dog TNA right in the middle of Raw if they would like, and they have. And, you know, from a business standpoint, I actually think it's genius. It's really hard, you know, for TNA to try to move into that solid second spot or even try to compete with them, because they can easily, you know, for instance, if Jeff Hardy was champion right now, they can show footage after footage of him just being, you know, just irrelevant. You know what I mean? His couple minute world title win against Edge at Extreme Rules before Punk comes out and cashes it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that they could do, you know, to show footage to tell TNA, like, okay, you guys shouldn't even try. So
I was just mad they didn't show the kind of upset they didn't show the box shooting star press at that WrestleMania with Brock and Kurt Angle.
Yeah, there was a part of me that was like, okay, well, it would make sense to, you know, to play it, but more of a portion of me was saying, okay, well, they're making Brock Lesnar look like a star and unstoppable. That was a botched spot, so they probably wouldn't show it. So, yeah. Then the last segment on Raw was the contract signing. But wasn't much out of this, honestly. Cena's music plays initially, then we get no Cena. That gave Lesnar some time to negotiate some not really negotiate, actually make some demands to Laurinaitis, which was more stroke, more money, no fines for beating people up, and a new show name, which I don't remember it verbatim. I believe it's Monday Night Raw starring Brock Lesnar. Laurinaitis agrees to this, and Cena comes out with the old school chain, stares Brock down, and eventually signs contract, and then Brock walks away. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. The biggest highlight that I got from this segment was finding out that John Cena was left-handed. That was the biggest highlight that I got from this segment. For it to be a go-home show, to Extreme Rules, it was just a very lackluster ending. It was really a lackluster show altogether, you know, heading to Extreme Rules, but a lackluster ending of Raw going into the pay-per-view.
Yeah. And like we always say, this could have just been a three-hour Raw that was pay-per-view caliber, and we could have waited until Over the Limit to have a pay-per-view, but hey, what do I know? The contract signing, Brock on the mic, actually kind of funny to me just hearing his accent and some of the things he was saying, like Section 3, Exhibit A. Like,
yeah.
Wow, you really studied the employee handbook there. So, yeah. But then another thing I noticed, that since he's been wearing his T-shirt, does he still have some contractual obligations with some sponsors? Because he's the only superstar with sponsors on his T-shirt.
That was actually a part of it was actually a part of the contract that he was still able to have sponsors and show sponsors live. That was actually a part of the contract. That was I saw Jimmy John's is one of the sponsors. And interestingly enough, Vince McMahon let it happen. That was a part of the deal. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and just my last thing here is I'm not sure if a contract signing is ever ended without some physical altercation. So if it hasn't, which maybe it has, but usually these things, contract signings and weddings on Raw usually get messed up. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Maybe this ain't the exact feud I wanted right away. Kind of changed my mind a little bit, but who knows? We'll see come Sunday if it all works out.
Yeah.
I would like down the line, I definitely want to see Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton at some point.
Yes.
Would like to see that.
I'll be fine with that as well. So we're actually going to take a call. We're going to skim through highlights of SmackDown and TNA as we always do, but I would like to hear what the listeners feel about Raw, and we're going to take a call. Let's skim through SmackDown right quick. We saw Daniel Bryan's promo. And then we saw Natalya defeat AJ by DQ. We saw Damian's Sandow promo. Then we saw Brodus Clay with Hornswoggle defeat Unico. Then we saw a Randy Orton interview. And Darren Young and Titus O'Neil defeating the Usos. Ryback defeating Danny Lerman, another jobber for Ryback. We saw the TV debut of Antonio Cesaro with Oksana, and then we saw Orton, Sheamus, and the Big Show defeat Brian, Henry, and Rhodes. It was originally the Great Khali. Cody Rhodes clipped him. He went to the back and Big Show come out and they win. Not much I got from here. Just Daniel Bryan's promo. He said wrestling, which is usually a taboo word to say. He dogs AJ again, which is normal. And then Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, I'll give them a shot. I've seen them tag team before. They seem very generic, but if they get some personality in their heel characters, I'll be a little bit I'll feel a little bit better with it. But I'll give them a shot. I'll be a little bit more lenient towards them and. And it's good to see Antonio Cesaro for all the wrestling heads, the ROH fans that are listening right now. You would know that he was Claudio Castagnoli in Ring of Honor, and he teamed up with Chris Hero, and they were the Kings of Wrestling, and they had the titles for about a year, the tag team titles of ROH for about a year. Very, very good team. And I actually liked Claudio Castagnoli a lot in his ROH days, and it's good to see him. I'm actually surprised that you know, he got caught up before Chris Hero did, but you know, it's good to see him. And yeah, that's really all I got from SmackDown.
Yeah, you covered a good amount of it, but there was only two things I wanted to say here with the Damian Sandow. I'm just hoping he's just not another guy who cuts these promos on these commercials and is well spoken for, can speak good or speak well, and then debuts and just is a bust.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that before with Mordecai. He was like that. He could talk on the mic, but man, that just did not work out. The other guy, there's somebody else. Who was the guy when he came in? Was with Chuck Palumbo when they first invaded WWE?
Oh,
tag team partner.
Johnny. Oh wow, Stamboli.
Yeah, exactly. But he was another one that had they changed his character up, and he was cutting good promos, and then fell flat on his face. So hopefully that doesn't happen with Sandow.
I'm sorry. You're talking about Stasiak or Jindrak or Sean O'Hare.
Yes. And that just goes to show you he could cut a promo, but yeah, fell flat on his face. So let's hope the best for Damian Sandow with that. And then just my other thing from SmackDown. Ryback, man. Well, first, let me say shout out to Josh Matthews real quick for giving props to Patrick Willis, which, if anybody doesn't know, that's a linebacker from the 49ers. That's my team. He said that Ryback had that instant impact coming in. I thought that was cool. But let me sum up Ryback's night for you. One, you got the local talent is already in the ring when you come back from commercial. Two, They cut a promo just to be interrupted by Ryback. Three, the superstars are watching in the back. I mean, this has started like a week or two ago. And then four, Ryback comes out, does about 3 to 4 moves, and it's over. Just boring. So that's Ryback's night every SmackDown. I mean, that sums it up right there. So I would have definitely rather them keep the Skip Sheffield gimmick. By all means. I mean, I'm totally okay with that.
Real quick.
At least you would have flavor.
Real quick, who do you see him feuding with? Or who would you want him
to
feud
face?
With? I guess, picture him as a face.
SmackDown roster?
That's
tough, man. I don't know because I'm just not feeling it. Like
Henry, maybe?
No, I don't want that because that would be so boring to me. Like, just so boring. I'm not feeling Ryback that much.
But he's a powerhouse character, so maybe feuding with Henry will show, you know, because he has that kind of fisherman slam that he does.
Yeah, this is where Wade Barrett would come in handy because
yeah.
I know he's a like
There's
you said he's the Ryback's the power character, but Wade Barrett could use his they could have him using his wit to defeat Ryback and get the upper hand on him each week, so that'd be a good spot. But unfortunately, he's hurt. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't have anything for. I don't feel Ryback that much, and I don't like the singlet. So.
Yeah. Keep it on RVD, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I differ a bit. I probably because I like Sheffield so much. I like him as a wrestler. I don't like what I'm seeing so far because I did in the beginning, first week or so, but the whole arms flapping and. and all of that. Like, he gets pumped like 10,000 times more than anybody in the crowd. And so at least tone yourself down a little bit and work up to getting pumped like that, because usually, like, the Goldbergs and the Angles, they would feed off the crowd and get pumped, but Ryback has nothing to feed off of because nobody's saying anything. So, another squash, another pointless squash character. I thought in the beginning of the year, or even last year, Triple H had this rule going on with nobody coming up to the main roster unless they have an angle. And I was almost positive. Yeah. I know that was with FCW wrestlers, but that really should be with anybody, because just seeing a bunch of squash matches, you know, just it's ridiculous. I'm not a fan of it at all. So let's actually bring a caller in here. State your name, where you're from, and your thoughts.
How you doing? My name is, first of all, thank you for taking my call. My name is John, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh. How you guys doing tonight?
Hey, good, John. How about yourself?
Good, good. I got a question in regards to the WWE. You know, you see a lot of talent get cut. And then, you know, Vince and the guys, they tend to keep wrestlers like the Great Khali. What are your thoughts on this guy? Because obviously he's got less moves than Andre did when Andre was sick.
Nice. Thanks so much for your call. That was a very, very good analogy there. I think that he has potential. I think the power moves that he has potential. I've seen him as Skip Sheffield. You know, he was on NXT. But like I was saying before with Tensai, when you're so engulfed in the character, you know, it really, you have to play that kind of character, so it tones you down so much. Undertaker can get away with it, yes. But at the same time, Kane can get away with it, yes. But when you're not known like that and you're so engulfed in a character, it really tones down your potential. I've seen Matt Bloom, you know, Giant Bernard when he was in Japan. I've seen him wrestle. He grew exponentially in Japan from what I saw in WWE, and he wasn't bad, you know, when he was Albert and A-Train. But now it doesn't even seem like, if nobody watched Japan videos and footage, which is about 80% of the world, of the wrestling world, unless you were in Japan, it would be hard to convince you that he's that good. You know what I mean? So it's hard for me to really be sold with a character that is a powerhouse character that you have to do power moves. You really can't show your agility and ability like you have. So
yeah, and I want to go back to what the caller said about, you know, keeping on guys like Khali, who we don't need. You know, but getting rid of, say, D.H. Smith, David Hart Smith comes along.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that dude could have been a world
champion.
Chris
Masters.
One day in my eyes. Yeah, yeah, even Masters. Mm-hmm. I ended up liking him. I got to a point where I was actually a fan. But I really felt that D.H. Smith could have been a world champion one day. And you cut him. But like you said, you keep guys like Khali. I don't know if it's just a roster spot because he's a big guy. I mean, I don't know, and I hate to go this way, but I don't know if it's a minority thing. I don't know. That's baffling to me. So, I mean, I would be okay if the Great Khali retired today, put it like that. But I hate the burn on him so much, but I've never been a fan. I can't get down with that, man. It's just,
I tell you what. They've got this WWE Studios. Khali was an actor before he came to the WWE. Why don't they just use him for acting purposes? I mean, you know, we'll still see him, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a very good question by the caller. Appreciate you calling in. We'll take a couple more calls here soon. The number, once again, is 347-884-8452. Time permitting, we'll take some calls. Feel free to call in. You know, if we see that a caller would be very, very good to take during what we're talking about, just like we just did, feel free to call in. Thank you so much for those who are in the chat room. We're running short on time, so we're going to go through Impact and ROH, and then we're going to talk about our Flavor of the Week topic. Impact Wrestling, we saw Bobby Roode with the new look, cuts his hair. Does an interview, and Bully Ray and Crimson defeated Austin Aries and Matt Morgan. We saw the Ric Flair segment saying Eric Bischoff, you know, he's going to pay a tribute for him, a tribute party next week. We saw Kurt Angle defeat AJ Styles. Hogan introduces the Open Fight Night, which has had a lot of controversy this past week, especially with Scott Steiner. He's been bashing TNA for quite some time, and he really bashed the Open Fight Night. So the TV title will be defended every week, Hogan says. We saw Velvet Sky, Mickie James, and Tara Brooke Tessmacher defeat Gail Kim, Madison Rain, Sarita, and Rosita. Brooke Tessmacher got the pin on Gail Kim, which is very interesting. They kind of built that up a little bit, too. We may be seeing the next feud. Devon defeated Gunner. We saw a James Storm promo doubting himself and taking some time off. And we saw RVD defeat Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy to become the number one contender. Just a few things, very, very short on time here. A few things that I saw that I highlighted about that. Kaz and Kazarian Daniels interfered in the Angle and AJ Styles match. Very good match between Angle and AJ Styles. I wasn't expecting anything less. Kazarian has his haircut too. I believe he donated them to Locks of Love, if I'm not mistaken. And now they're continuing an angle that's just getting beat up more and more. It's just now it's what's in the envelope. It's just it's ridiculous to me. Devon looked really good in the ring. Looks like he's picked up a little weight, but he looked great in the ring. And then James Storm is legitimately injured. He's got some nagging injuries, so that's where they're going with that. And then RVD had a nice split leg backslide to become the number one contender. But a few days later, he was shown, a few days before, he was shown getting beat up by Brock Lesnar. So Open Fight Night, I'm open to. We'll see. It's innovative. I like innovative things, and I'm not going to bash it like Scott Steiner has. He said a lot of things. You can check sites, as many sites as you can. I'm sure that they'll be talking about it. I'm not going to bash it like Steiner has bashed it. So a decent impact. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, solid. You know, it's something different since we're seeing Hogan as GM, and the action is, you know, getting back to being good. You know, TNA is still a very, 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 very distant second. With ROH, you know, ROH will probably argue with that as well. So that's what I got from TNA. That's what I got from Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, you pretty much went over everything. Kurt Angle and AJ Styles, I mean, that's two good wrestlers there, so that's good to see. Love Kazilla, as always. that gimmick, man, that's so funny to me. And I tell you what, man, James Storm and Bobby Roode, they got some good chemistry going there. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like they've got some good chemistry going there, and like to see these two interact. So pretty funny. I do like Rude a lot. I really can't explain why, but I'm into Bobby Rude. And then for the RVD, Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson, that's cool, but Brock Lesnar beat two out of these three wrestlers, so
yeah,
can't really say much here. I don't care.
The winner of that triple threat match is Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. I'm like you, man. Not much here this week.
Yeah. We'll go on to ROH here. Mike Bennett defeated, I'm sorry about that, the Briscoes defeated the wrestling's greatest tag team. This is actually day two of Showdown in the Sun. The Briscoes defeated wrestling's greatest tag team. Then we saw wrestling's greatest tag team get healed up, and as in heel, as in the bad guy heel. And a post-match beatdown to the Briscoes. We saw T.J. Perkins defeat Fire Ant. Fire Ant is from Chikara, another semi-notable promotion. And then we saw Roderick Strong defeat Jay Lethal, become new TV champ with help from Tommaso Ciampa. How you feel about Bobby Roode is how I feel about Ciampa, actually. I like Tommaso Ciampa. There's something about him that I like. I really like that power bomb lung blower that he does. It's a really, really good move, pretty sweet. You know, decent action. Wasn't as good as last week, but, you know, ROH still delivers with the quality of action that they have that's actually better than ring than TNA as far as the action is concerned.
Totally. I'll definitely agree with that. Just two things here, man. It is a rough night for my Ring of Honor fandom because World's Greatest Tag Team and Jay Lethal, those are probably my two biggest bright spots in ROH, and like you said, they both took L's, so a little bit of a long night for Ring of Honor for me this week.
Well, we have to be legal here. They're wrestling's greatest tag team now for all the legal purposes. Real quick, just a couple minutes here to spend on the Extreme Rules matches and predictions. Just real quick, we'll give you ours. Let's see, we have the Intercontinental Championship match. Big Show, Cody Rhodes. I'm going. Show keeps it for one more month.
Yeah, I'm with you here, man. There's no reason to have Rhodes win it again. So Show.
Yep. False Count Anywhere match: Kane versus Randy Orton. This is a tough one, actually, because we saw Kane beat Kane beat Orton at Mania, and then Orton beat Kane at a subsequent SmackDown. Kane had the upper hand with the pipes. Randy Orton had the upper hand with the pipes. So I think I'm gonna go Kane. Pay-per-view, two straight pay-per-views. I think I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Kane again.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one only because I think after, if Kane would win this, I could see him feuding with Sheamus for the world title. Not winning the world title, but just moving along to feud with Sheamus, and he's got to get some steam and get rolling. So two wins over Orton could do the trick.
I would totally be a fan of that, Kane feuding with Sheamus. Two out of three falls, Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan. I think we both kind of lean towards our thoughts there. Sheamus wins this match and keeps the title.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's got to just make Bryan chase it. Just sucks, though, because I don't know what to do with Bryan after this, because you definitely don't want to give him another month just to have him lose again, and you don't want to take the strap off of Sheamus just yet. So
yeah.
I'm just stuck in a hard place right there.
Yeah. Chicago Street Fight, CM Punk versus Chris Jericho. I'm going to go out on a limb again, and I'm actually going to go Jericho this one. It makes sense to me for Jericho, out of his contract, which is not long, to at least, you know, for him to come back. I don't see him, you know, being a part of, you know, just putting Punk over and over and over and over. So I think that he'll have his first solo WWE championship reign come Sunday.
Yeah, I want to do it so bad. I want to go Jericho so bad, but popular consensus, so I'm going to just stick with Punk on this one. And then we'll see these two feud again at Over the Limit.
Yeah, which they already have a match scheduled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't end.
Then we see the Extreme Rules match, Brock Lesnar and John Cena. This one's tough. Brock Lesnar's really had the upper hand on John Cena. John Cena's on a losing streak. I think that Lesnar beats Cena, and Cena, like, you know, kind of gets enraged and not turn heel, but he just kind of goes back to what Ez was saying, and he may, you know, Lesnar may put over Cena in a month or two or three, but probably not come Sunday.
I kind of want to say draw here because I got a feeling it's going to be some type of crappy ending that, you know, there's going to be some type of interference or something's going to happen. I want to say draw, but I'll say I'm going Cena. I'm going to do it. That's my guy now. I'm going Cena. Cena / draw.
Either or is good for you, huh?
And pregame, Santino.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Santino retains the U.S. title. Real quick, I'll give you the abbreviated version of the Flavor of the Week. I wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report. Just search Chris Featherstone on Bleacher Report. Wrote an article about the Flavor of the Week, and I'm actually going to write an article tomorrow about the greatest Extreme Rules moments. So be sure to be on the lookout for that article and check out the article that I've written about this week's Flavor of the Week. Come Saturday, I'm going to write an article about the predictions a little bit more in depth of why I think that each person is going to win. So real quick, we'll talk about the Flavor of the Week. This week's Flavor of the Week is wrestlers that died under the age of 40. It's just a sad moment, just a real tragic moment. There's I recorded nearly 30 wrestlers that have died under the age of 40. In my article, I documented, I did a documentary of 10 of them. I listed a bunch, but I did about 10. I did a British Bulldog, which died of at the age of 39. Yokozuna died at 38. Umaga died at Yokozuna died at 30. He was 34. Umaga was 36. Brian Pillman was 35. Owen Hart was 34. Kerry Von Erich was 33, as well as Chris Candido was also 33. Crash Holly was 32. David Von Erich was 25, and of course Eddie Guerrero was 38. It's just really tough. I remember I remember a lot of these deaths. I was actually I was born all of these deaths. I was a really, really little kid when David Von Erich died, but I definitely remember just the residual effect of a lot of these deaths. The most recent one we saw was Test at 33 years old, and Lance Cade was only 29 when he just passed. And it's really tough because a lot of these, as I wrote in my article, it's attributed to just really being just the road. I mean, just being just working hard on the road and having to be a physical toll, being addicted to painkillers just because being on the road is just so tough. A lot of them is because of depression. For instance, the Renegade from WCW was only 33 years old. He killed himself. And the Von Erich speaks for herself. Chris Von Erich was only 21 because his brothers died previous to him. I believe it was early 90s, if I'm not mistaken, when he killed himself. 91, if I'm not mistaken. Killed himself. Shot himself in the head, I believe. Because he was so depressed about David and Carrie dying, and he was trying to get his break in the industry, and because of his size and his stature, and because of the Von Erich name being so tainted at that time, unfortunately, he didn't make it. He didn't make that break like his older brothers did, and he killed himself. David Von Erich, he died at only 25 years old. He had a ton of potential. He was on deck of being NWA world champion, had a very good match that I actually have a video of the match on my Bleacher Report article between Ric Flair, himself and Ric Flair. And, Kerry Von Erich, he drove himself off a cliff, and I believe he was riding a Jeep, and he killed himself through a car accident, and because he was just going through a lot of marital issues, I believe, divorce, and just his wrestling career was just kind of diminishing after he came in 1990 and won the Intercontinental title. After that, he was just used in some very lower card matches in the WWE, and yeah, it's tough. British Bulldog died in 2002, I believe a day or two after he teamed up with his son. Speaking of D.H. Smith, his son at the time was 16 years old, and they were in a tag team match for an independent promotion, and he died a day after, just a lot of them with heart diseases, a lot of complications of the medications they took. Umaga died from an overdose of medications, muscle relaxers, I believe it was. Yokozuna died from fluid blockage in his lungs. He got up to upwards of 600 pounds. I saw him one of his last matches in 1999. He wrestled for this really not really notable promotion called Heroes of Wrestling. It was just a bunch of older wrestlers, and he was in the main event. It was a tag match with him and Jake Roberts against Jim Neidhart and the other King Kong Bundy. And he was so big. Like he just kind of let himself go, and he just really. I mean, he was about. He was about lower fives, high fours, low fives in the WWE. But he was upwards of 700 pounds at the time that he died. So it's real tough. And then of course Eddie Guerrero, mostly everybody knows where they were at the time that Eddie Guerrero passed.
Probably the one that stings the most for most.
Oh yeah, yeah. For me personally, it does. It stings the most because I'll never forget that 2004 No Way Out win against Brock Lesnar. It was one of my, and I've been watching wrestling all of my life. That was one of my favorite moments in wrestling history because it was a David and Goliath just personified. I mean, yeah. Nobody even, I mean, his chances of winning in people's opinion was slim to none, and none favored. And, but he won, you know, and the way that they did it, it was nearly a 40-minute match, and it was just a great match and just a great way to solidify, you know, a very, very amazing career for Eddie Guerrero. And before he died, he actually won the match, the last match. It was I didn't have to do any type of research for this. I remember it. It was he won by DQ against a match versus Mr. Kennedy, you know, Mr. Anderson and TNA, but he won the match by DQ, and he was on deck to be the number one contender of the title, the world title that Batista had at the time. So, yeah, it's, you know, paying tribute to, you know, to these wrestlers is something that is well deserved, and you know, they basically, you know, lived and died for us, for our viewing, for our enjoyment, for our pleasure.
They're still human.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to remember that.
They're not larger. They're larger in life and character, but not in actuality. You know, they're human beings that have feelings, and you know, they go through stuff just like we do. And I just, you know, still to this day, I pray for all the families of these lost wrestlers, of these wrestlers that passed. And it's really tough. I'm sure for the family still. So.
Yeah. And then just last thing I would want to say is, the crazy thing, like I said, some of these guys that you mentioned could still be wrestling to this day. So,
that's
really tough. Yeah.
Yeah, Guerrero would be 44, I believe, if he was still around. And
Test, Cade, I mean, Umaga.
Oh yeah. definitely. Umaga was wrestling before he passed. He was actually wrestling for Hulk Hogan had a Hulkamania tour and overseas, and he was wrestling at the time. He was still actively wrestling at the time of his death. Actually, the 10 that I said, all of them, except for maybe Yokozuna, just about all of them were actively wrestling at the time of their death. Of course, Owen Hart's tragic death, falling 80 feet from the rafters, just, you know, basically. All of Chris Candido, he was 33. He died because he broke his ankle, tibia, fibula, wrestling a match in TNA at their lockdown pay-per-view. He died because of complications of surgery from a blood clot from just, you know, a freak injury at a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So stuff like that is really tough. So hate to end on a somber moment, but we do have to close. Feel free to follow us at Crave Wrestling. Like us at the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. Search me on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone. I've got articles coming up. I got articles in the past. Be sure to read and support that. If you have PayPal, we'd love for you to support us financially. The email address is cravewrestling@gmail.com. This show is for you. So we thank you so much for that. And we'll be here. Crave Wrestling is here, and Pancakes and Power Slams is here for you. So we thank you so much. Once again, at Crave Wrestling, follow us. Like us on Facebook. Look me up on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone. Spread the word about Crave Wrestling. Thank you so much for listening to us. Spread the word, and have a great evening. Goodbye.